Hebrews chapter 4, verses 1 to 11.
Therefore, since the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us be careful that none of you be found to have fallen short of it. For we also have had the good news proclaimed to us, just as they did. But the message they heard was of no value to them, because they did not share the faith of those who obeyed. Now we who have believed enter that rest, just as God has said. So I declared on oath in my anger, they shall never enter my rest. And yet his works have been finished since the creation of the world. For somewhere he has spoken about the seventh day in these words. On the seventh day God rested from all his works. And again in the passage above he says, they shall never enter my rest. Therefore, since it still remains for some to enter that rest, and since those who have formerly had the good news proclaimed to them did not go in because of their disobedience, God again set a certain day, calling it today. This he did when a long time later he spoke through David, as in the passage already quoted. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken later about another day. There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest, so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience.
Many thanks, Julia, for reading that to us. And do turn back to page 4 of your Bibles. We're going to be spending a few minutes looking at those verses from Genesis chapter 2. And let me add my welcome to the others given so far. My name's John. I'm one of the clergy here at St. Matthew's. And we're working our way through these early chapters of the Bible, looking at how it all started. And we're thinking today about life at its best, and particularly about work and rest. And when it comes to work and rest, our culture usually goes in one of two different directions. I guess it's a bit early for Micah to be thinking about work and rest, but he'll face these decisions, these challenges, these opportunities. The first direction that our culture can take is to really fixate on work, to almost worship work. It might be the career-driven young man or woman always being first in and last out, devastated when they get overlooked for a promotion. It could be the student putting every waking hour into their studies, evenings and weekends spent in the library. It could be the parents who fill every single minute of their children's lives with activities that will make an impressive UCAS form. It could be the lady facing unemployment, wondering whether she has any value. It could be the guy who spirals into despair in the months after retiring. Well, all these examples, and I'm sure many others could be described as well, they've got something in common. What they've got in common is that life at its best is found in work. True satisfaction, real success, happiness is found in work. In other words, there's almost an underlying worship of work. It's the thing that gives us meaning and identity, a sort of worship of activity, of achievement. It defines priorities. It dominates the diary. It shapes self-worth. And when it's removed, there's not really anything left. Just a gaping hole. And that's the first direction that our culture can take over questions of work and rest. It can start to worship work. But the second direction that it can take is to fixate on rest and relaxation, sort of worshipping leisure time. And I'm sure we've seen this too. I guess it could show up in the student who parties hard every evening and weekend, living life on the wild side, basically ignoring studies, doing the bare minimum. It might be the worker who really lives for the golf course or the spa break. It could be the busy stay-at-home parent who longs for the peace and quiet of the evening. It could be the family working themselves ragged to save for the next jet-setting trip abroad. It could be the exhausted employee who's hanging in there for the hope of a decent pension and the opportunity to enjoy life properly at the end of it all in retirement. And what all those examples have in common is the idea that what life is all about, where true satisfaction and enjoyment can be found, what will make me truly happy is an experience of rest, of leisure, of holiday and retirement. That's the goal. That's life at its best. And I wonder which of those two directions you can relate to. Worshipping work, worshipping leisure. Well, the Bible wants to speak to people in both groups. We've only got a short passage today from the book of Genesis, but it's hugely important for us to get a right view of ourselves, of our world, and of work and rest. If God shows us life at its best, then we've got the Maker's instructions here. And over the last few weeks, we've been looking at the first chapter of Genesis. We've seen God creating the whole world as an ordered and beautiful place for humans to live. It raises lots of questions about how that fits with science, and we'll be coming on to those in a few weeks' time when Frank will be speaking about that. But the pinnacle of God's creation is humanity. Men and women caring for God's world, expanding his rule across the planet. And God gives us these early chapters of the Bible so that we can know what he's like, what we're like, what the world's like. And he wants us to know him, to live for him as we're designed to do. So human beings really are the pinnacle of God's creation. But actually we're not the climax. That comes on day 7 here at the start of Genesis 2. It's where it's all been heading. So listen to what it says down in verse 1. Do look down with me. Genesis chapter 2 verse 1. It says there, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work." And the first point that I want to draw from this is really obvious, but it's also really important. And it's this. It's that God finishes what he begins. God finishes what he begins. You can't miss it, can you? It was all complete. God had finished. Mission accomplished. Job done. Perhaps you remember how Genesis 1 started. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then it all unfolds over the first 6 days until we get to day 7, where we get that same phrase repeated. The heavens and the earth were complete. All of them. A vast array of places, creatures, stars, countries, trees. They're all in place. It's all ready to go. So God finishes what he begins. Now for us, after days of hard work, we need to stop. We're exhausted. We need sleep. We need food. We need a massage or a holiday. But God's not like that. This resting here isn't because he's worn out from inventing 5 million different species of insects or from designing 300 billion stars to make up the Milky Way. God never gets tired. No, this resting is because God's work is complete. He can sit back with his feet up and enjoy the satisfaction of a job well done. Have you ever had that feeling? I remember one summer's evening, not long after we'd moved into a new house, I'd spent the day tidying up the garden, cutting back overgrown bushes, mowing the lawn. It was a hard physical day's work, but then I could sit back and relax and enjoy the lovely surroundings. Well, that's what God's doing on day 7. He's finished all his work of creating. It's done. It's no longer formless and empty, but ordered and full. It's teeming with life and potential. God started off with nothing, And just look what he's done. He's the sort of God that brings beauty and order out of emptiness and chaos. And that's something that God's people always need to hear. So when they were wandering in the wilderness with Moses, freed from Egypt, waiting to get to the promised land, well, God finishes what he begins. Or when God's people are gone far off into exile, longing for the day when God had promised he'd bring them back to the land, well, God finishes what he begins. And it's true for us too. In this messy and chaotic and fractured world, we might wonder if God can really finish off the job of making all things new. Can he really bring his people to their glorious end, that new beginning? Can he bring me through the testing trials of this life? Can he bring young Micah safely through this bewildering world? Well, the answer is, of course he can. God finishes what he begins. He's done it once in creation, and he can happily do it again. So we can rely on him, even when we can't see where it's all going. That's the first point that this passage makes for us today. God finishes what he begins. And this big truth about God, well, it makes a huge difference in our lives. And there are two ways that it affects us. We're going to look at them in turn. And this takes us on to our next point, and it's this. God gives rhythm to life. God gives a rhythm to life. So look down at verse 3 with me. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So the seventh day is blessed. It's special. It's set apart. It's different. Nothing else in all of Genesis is set apart as holy. There's no holy place as such, just a holy time, a special day to rest, a day to know God's blessing. 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. That's how it went for God and humanity. We're made in the image of God, so we follow his pattern. God gives rhythm to life. 6 days work, 1 day rest. 6 days work, 1 day rest, and so on. Life isn't just a monotonous, homogenous banging of the same drum day after day. There's variety, difference, fast and slow, work and rest. That's the rhythm that God's given us in creation. It's the origin of our 7 day week. God rested after he'd finished his work. Now the difference for us is that we never properly finish our work. You know that feeling, don't you? You get to the end of the day and what you wanted to do, just there's still more to do. We never finish our work properly. When the time is up, we just have to stop to rest. And in many ways, this is an act of faith. Why is it better for humanity to take time to rest, to be refreshed? Wouldn't we do better just to get ahead of the crowd, to squeeze in another day's work? Then we could do more, earn more, achieve more. But God says to us right back at the beginning of creation, no, trust me, set apart a day for rest. 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. It's a chance for humanity to break the never-ending cycle of doing. A chance just to be, to pause, to stop, to look around at the beauty that God's created, to enjoy this holy moment by looking ultimately to the Holy One, our Creator God. He wants us to look past all the good gifts around us and to see the good giver who stands above it all. That's why Israel had the Sabbath, a day of rest. The Hebrew words for Sabbath and seventh and rest, They all sound quite similar. And the seventh of the Ten Commandments that God gave to Israel, it says this, it's up on the screen. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that's in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So Israel took Saturday, the seventh day of the week, the Sabbath, as a day of rest. It was God's gift to them, though sadly it was often neglected or turned into a legalistic day of dull drudgery. But that's not the design. It's a day of rest when we remember the beauty of God's good creation. I was in Jerusalem for a conference back in June. The conference finished on the Friday afternoon, so I went with a group of friends into the old city to experience the start of the Sabbath at the western wall of the temple. So there's a picture. As the sun was setting, all different kinds of Jews gathered to mark the start of the Sabbath. It's an amazing experience. Some read solemnly from their scriptures while others danced joyfully in celebration. Well, the Sabbath is God's gift to humanity. As Jesus said, the Sabbath was made for man, for people. Now, the early Christians began to gather not on the Sabbath, the seventh day, but on the first day of the week, the Lord's Day, the day that he rose from the dead. That's why we meet here on a Sunday, the first day of the week. It's Resurrection Day. And the New Testament makes clear that in some ways, all days are alike. Whether we rest on a Sunday or a Saturday, whether we go to church on a Sunday or a Friday, it's not the main thing. The point is that God has designed a rhythm to our life. And we ignore that rhythm at our peril. Those of us who've been close to exhaustion or breakdown will know just how fragile our bodies can be. If we mistreat them, if we ignore our Maker's instructions, then we shouldn't be surprised if we run into problems. Caffeine, well, it'll only get us so far. God gives us rhythm to life, and that rhythm includes rest. And this is a huge challenge to those of us who are like that first group I described earlier, almost worshipping work. God's rhythm of work and rest tells us that work is not the be-all and end-all of life. Our achievements aren't the ultimate thing. The seven-day pattern reminds us that work doesn't define us. God does. And isn't that liberating? I find this hugely helpful. There's more to life than work. Rest is good. It's even commanded. We shouldn't feel guilty when we relax, when we stop to enjoy God's creation, when we spend time in worship and adoration of him, our glorious creator, when we pause to be with other people and to rest with them. This is good. It's good for us. It's good for others. It's good for society. When we rest, we acknowledge that we aren't ultimately in charge of our destiny. We say to ourselves and to anyone who's watching that we trust our Heavenly Father to provide what we need from 6 days of work, and that he's got it all in hand. And we can do this because he always gets his work done. He always finishes what he begins. That's why he gives us this rhythm in life. So how does your life reflect this rhythm? Do you stop to rest? I'm not about to start laying down rules for what we can or can't do on a Sunday, but we each need to ask ourselves whether we're respecting the rhythm of life that our God has decreed for our good, work and rest. It's almost a badge of honour in some parts of Cambridge to be busy, isn't it? You're not really doing life right if you're not run ragged, exhausted, diary packed full of activities and work. Well, God calls us to live differently. To delight in rest, in creation, in Him. Yes, we work hard for 6 days, but then we can rest. God gives a rhythm to our lives. And then finally, because God always finishes what He begins, we see that God points to the ultimate rest. God points to the ultimate rest. Perhaps if you know the start of Genesis well, you'll feel that there's something missing from our verses. Have you spotted it? All the way through Genesis 1, God created things just by speaking. And then each day He looks at what He's made and He sees that it's good. And then there's evening. And then there's morning, the start of a new day. It happens again and again through each of the 6 days. But then we get to the seventh day. And that formula is missing. There's no ending, no eighth day. Just the seventh day with sort of no declared ending. Unlike every other day in the creation account, day seven has no end. Now this points us to the ultimate never-ending rest that's going to come as the goal of all creation. There is a final, ultimate, eternal Sabbath rest yet to come. In other words, life is going somewhere. It's not just an endless treadmill of going round and round in cycles. There's a goal, a destination, a target. There will come a point when we can join God in His ultimate, never-ending Sabbath rest. In fact, it's what we're made for. To enjoy rest with God. In many ways, it's more than that. The great African bishop, Augustine, he put it like this. He said, "You have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you," speaking to God. So do you have a restless heart? We're longing, aren't we, to find a place where we can relax, where we can be ourselves and let our hair down. Somewhere where we'll feel satisfied, content, happy. And so often we fill our lives with busyness and entertainment and work and leisure, and we don't realise what it is that we're doing, what's going on. It's almost like we're trying to hide from reality by keeping ourselves busy. What is it that will actually satisfy us, that will give us true, deep, lasting soul rest? You have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. We're made in the image of God. We have, as it were, a God-shaped hole in our lives, and we long for the day when we can rest with Him, rest in Him. This is the way that God set up this world. He points us forward to this ultimate rest. That's how it's put later in the Bible. We read these words earlier. There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from His. So there will come a day when we'll enter God's rest fully and finally. All our strivings and struggles will be over, done, finished, complete. It's been God's plan since the very beginning of creation that we'd get to enjoy rest with Him. So how do we get this ultimate rest? Well, Jesus tells us, "Come to me," He says, "all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." Jesus gives us this ultimate rest. he lived and died and rose again so that he could take our burdens and lift our weary souls. He's done it all. There's no more work to be done. And all he does is points us to that ultimate rest and says, come to me. Perhaps some of us here don't know Jesus, don't know the rest that he offers, let alone the promises he makes of forgiveness, of unconditional love and acceptance, of hope and purpose. Well, Jesus wants us all to enjoy this and more in relationship with him. He invites us to come to him. It's open to anyone and everyone. But perhaps some of us here do already know Jesus, and you really need this reminder of eternal rest. Exhausted, despairing of how overwhelming life feels, crushed by responsibilities far beyond our capacity. Well, Jesus wants to offer us rest, true, deep, eternal rest. We believe in a God who always finishes what he begins. He will get his people to this ultimate rest. And so this means we don't need to live for the holidays, for the weekend, for our hobbies, for our leisure pursuits. Yes, they can be good gifts, but some of us can get to the point where we're practically worshipping these things. We live for them. They define us and drive us. Well, God says that rest is good, but rest in this world is only a tiny foretaste of that ultimate rest to come. And if we miss out on the travel and the hobbies and the fun that other people seem to be enjoying, well, we can remember that the best is yet to come. We've got that ultimate rest. It's going to be far better than anything that this world can offer. So what does Genesis 2 tell us? It tells us that God finishes what he begins. We can be confident in him. And then because of this, God gives us rhythm to life. We've got a weekly pattern of work and rest. And then God points us to the ultimate rest. We know where life is going when we come to Jesus for eternal rest. So will we rest? Will we rest weekly? Will we rest eternally? Will we rest in God's ability to finish things? Let me leave a moment of quiet and then I'll pray.